This is The Pulse, stories about the people and places at the heart of health and science. I'm Maiken Scott. This story is from our episode about teens and mental health. You can find us wherever you get your podcasts. How can parents and other adults help teenagers navigate these difficult years? How can they bring up issues around mental health without sounding panicked or overbearing? Reporter Mary Rose Madden decided to take a little crash course. She lives in Baltimore, Maryland, and she has a teenager at home. She attended a presentation at Arbutus Middle School when NAMI was visiting. NAMI, the National Alliance for Mental Illness, organizes an assembly called Ending the Silence, where they bring in volunteers to share their experiences.
Here we go, eighth grade. They shuffle in with their hoodies and phones, and it seems like they're either wearing fancy sneakers or Crocs, ripped jeans or sweatpants. They plop on the gymnasium floor, and one student walks around with a bin. Mr. Wiener, the PE and health teacher, reminds the eighth graders why they're here.
Make a good choice right now. Your earphones, your phones, whatever electronics you have, put them in the bin.
The students seem to settle down, and then it's time for Ken Cannon to tell his story. He's a 43-year-old statistician who is volunteering with NAMI. For the first half of Ken's life, no one mentioned mental illness or mental health. No one looked him in the eye and explained that this is a real thing. But he felt its presence. There's a history of mental illness in his family, yet no one talked about it. That is something Ken wants to change.
So just by a quick show of hands, how many of you know somebody who has a mental health condition in the room?
Not quite half the students raised their hands.
So the point is that it's mental health conditions are very common.
He says everybody is going to feel sadness now and then. It's normal. But when it starts to affect your day-to-day life, that's when you should seek help. Ken was a shy kid. He did well in school, didn't make a lot of noise. He experienced his first major depression when he was in college.
I was dating somebody in college, and one day she left my apartment and never spoke to me again, never saw her again, never heard from her again. And I got very down. I started sleeping quite a bit. I didn't really want to do anything. I didn't eat anything. I lost a lot of weight.
He finally decided to get help. He went to therapy, got on medication. He tells the students about his warning signs and coping strategies. Mental health conditions are treatable, he says. You can take care of your mental health just like you do your physical health. The eighth graders are quiet. I don't see anyone sneaking out their phone or talking to a friend.
One of the biggest reasons people don't seek help for very common mental health conditions is stigma.
He says stigma is the judgment we put on a mental illness.
How do you think stigma affects people with mental health conditions?
Not many hands go up, but every now and then a student answers. I couldn't record their answers, though. They're just 13. But here are some of the things they were saying. Stigma makes people feel ashamed. Stigma makes you feel alone. Ken puts a slide up on the projector. It shows about 20 different celebrities.
These are all examples of people that live with various types of mental health conditions, depression, ADHD, anxiety, bipolar disorder.
Students see photos of Adele, Alicia Keys, Leonardo DiCaprio, LeBron James, Kerry Washington.
So the point is that people that have mental health conditions can live successful lives.
The gymnasium is very quiet. Maybe too quiet. You can almost hear the crickets. I know those crickets well. I have a teenager. I think about talking to him about mental health, but I truly have no idea how to talk to him about it. The kid doesn't say much about his school day, about his friends, even what he wants to do this weekend, about what brings him joy these days. So, yeah, I have a horse in this race. A horse who loves video games and sneakers. A horse I adore. So here I am at Arbutus Middle School in Baltimore County, home of the Eagles, ready to listen in on what a conversation with teens could look like. I want to hear their questions, their fears. I want to hear them. But so far, they're not talking.
All right, I am not used to mics. I'm usually too loud in them, so just let me know.
Then Stephanie Schaefer, 33 years old, another volunteer speaker, steps up to the mic.
Before I begin my part, let's hear a little bit about you guys. Raise your hand and give me one of your favorite hobbies. Yeah? Basketball. Is that yours too? No, what's yours? Games, like video games?
Stephanie's warming them up. She connects with them over their shared love of anime, animals, and books. And then she starts her story. She grew up in rural Maryland. Everyone was white. She's multiracial, white, black, and Native American. Kids and even teachers called her names. She started self-harming when she was in middle school. She opens up more and more. She trusts her audience without question.
I tended to miss school a lot because I was isolating. I was trying to get away from people. I was very intimidated to be at school. I would also hide in the bathrooms a lot because I didn't want to be around people.
She tells them why she was isolating, how a neighbor started abusing her when she was young, how her friend told her to tell no one or she'd get locked up. She talks about how she felt worthless, scared.
And I had my first hospitalization at a behavioral health unit at the age of 14 years old. I spent high school in and out of psychiatric hospitals while somehow maintaining my grades.
And she describes what it was like to get her first diagnosis, chronic depression.
Having a diagnosis was two-sided for me. Relieved, I was so relieved because I knew I could get help because, like, it might have been a label, but it was, like, something that could be worked with. There were things they could do. But I was also scared because of the fear of being judged. Or, you know, I'd hear in the news how people with mental illness were violent and dangerous. And the last thing I ever wanted to do was hurt anybody.
She weaves her narrative through different psychiatrists, various hospitals. She talks about how she couldn't find a therapist she connected with. And with each new doctor came a new diagnosis. She tells them everything. Times when she self-harmed and moments of deep despair. Hands start popping up. And I finally hear the students' voices. They want to know, what happens when you call 988? Do the police come?
They will send a mobile crisis unit, not cops, but a mobile crisis unit to help you. And sometimes it will require hospitalization sometimes. I mean, I have been hospitalized. I can tell you, it is necessary sometimes for your best interest. It's not as horrible as people make it out to be. It's not like the horror movies with the psych wards and stuff. It's not like that at all.
Another hand goes up. What's a mobile crisis unit?
These are people who are trained to de-escalate situations. So like someone who is suicidal, they can help talk them down that maybe they don't need to be hospitalized in that moment, but they are specifically trained to handle mental health and substance abuse situations. What is being in the hospital like? That's a loaded question. I don't think we have that kind of time, but it's overwhelming, I will be honest, because they do take a lot away to keep you safe. Because you remember, usually the hospitalization, you're threatening your life or someone else's. So they do that to keep you safe. The hardest thing for me was when they started taking away pencils because I like to draw.
More questions pour in. Do they take your phone? Were people in your life weird about it? It's like they're asking, if I ask for help, what will happen to me? Stephanie gives the 150 students a peek behind the curtain. And she doesn't sugarcoat it. She's honest and vulnerable. And when it's time to wrap up, she doesn't pretend to have it all figured out.
I will never stop having mental illness, but I still accept it is there and adapt to still achieve my life goals and dreams. I find, though, that as I get older, even as life continues to throw me curveballs, my relapses are fewer and of a lesser degree than before. I find that my joy goes beyond who I am as an individual and how I can be there for others.
This whole afternoon with the 8th grade Eagles, it stays with me. All this time, I've been feeling unqualified to broach the topic of mental health with my kid. But the thing that worked in this setting, that made the conversation happen, was honesty, sharing stories, not being afraid to talk about mental health issues. I can do that, but it's not one conversation we need to have. We need to open the lines, So, who is going to talk about these things? We are. We've got to.
That story was reported by Mary Rose Madden.